ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततं जयो मुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर् उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठुकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Text 20. Vishyeshu gunadhyasyat Pumsa sangastato bhavet Sangat tatra bhavet kamaha कामाद एव कलिर्दृणाम् विषयेषु गुणाध्यासात् पुंसा संगस्ततो भवेत् संगात् तत्र भवेत् कामः कामाद एव कलिर्दृणाम् विषयेषु गुणाध्यासात् पुंस संगस्ततो भवेत् संगात् तत्र भवेत् कामः कामाद् एव कलिर्निर्णाम् विषयेषु गुणाध्यासात् संगास्ततो भवेत् संगात् तत्र भवेत् कामः कामादेव कलिर्नृणाम् ओके ओके द ट्रांसलिटरेशन विषयेषु in material objects of sense gratification. Guna adhyasat. Because of them presuming to be good. Pumsaha. Of a person. Sangaha. Attachment. Tataha. From the presumption. Bhavet. Comes into being. Sangat, from that material association. Tatra, thus, bhavet, arises. Kamaha, lust. Kamat, from lust. Eva, also. Kalihi, quarrel. Drinam, among men. Translation. One who accepts material sense objects as desirable certainly becomes attached to them. From such attachment, lust arises, and this lust creates quarrel among men. I'll read the translation again. One who accepts material sense objects as desirable certainly becomes attached to them. From such attachment, lust arises, and this lust creates quarrel among men. Purport. The actual goal of human life should not be material sense gratification, for it is the basis of conflict in human society. Although the Vedic literature sometimes sanctions sense gratification, The ultimate purpose of the Vedas is renunciation. Since Vedic culture cannot possibly recommend anything that disturbs human life, a lusty person is easily angered and becomes inimical to anyone frustrating his lusty desires. Since his desire can never be satisfied, a lusty person ultimately becomes frustrated with his own partner, and thus a love-hate relationship develops. A lusty person considers himself to be enjoyer of God's creation and therefore full of pride and false prestige. The lusty, proud person will not be attracted to the process of humble submission at the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master. Attraction to this is the direct enemy of Krishna consciousness, which depends upon humble submission to the representative of Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna also states that this desire is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Because modern society sanctions unrestricted mixing of men and women, its citizens cannot possibly achieve peace. Rather, the regulation of conflict becomes the basis of social survival. This is the symptom of an ignorant society falsely accepting the material body as the highest good. As described here by the words, Visheyeshu Guna Adhyasat, one who is too affectionate to his own body will inevitably be seized by this desire. Om Ajnanati Virandasya Jnana Anjana Shlaka Chakshur Unmilitam Yenam Tasme Shri Guruve Namaha. So, actually, this shloka, we often hear in Bhagavad Gita itself, where Lord Krishna has said, Kama esa krodha esa rajoguna samudbhava mahasano mahapapam vidihainam iha vairinam. It is only because of kama is why krodha comes. So because of lust and desire and attachment to sense gratification objects is why someone gets anger. Now, why would anger arise? Anger arises because of fear of loss of something in life or not being able to achieve something. And the reason for this is because one develops an attachment to achieve something or the fear of losing something. So for example, in the material universe, we often see why do countries end up fighting each other or people committing crime? Because of the reason that they want to take something which doesn't belong to them. And actually, this is the main problem in today's human society, that one should realize that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. Actually, He owns everything. And if one understands himself to be part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then this kind of kama and krodha will not come. Of course, it is not possible that every jivatma who takes a human body of form will have some kind of desire because of past karma. So, what Vedas have prescribed is always to make sure that desire or attachment is directed towards the Supreme Lord and everything is utilized for His pleasure. Like, as it is said, that the Vedic literature sometimes sanctions sense gratification. Now, this is not saying that Vedas is giving a free check to say, do whatever you want. No. For example, Vedas prescribe many sacrifices. The institution of marriage itself is sanctified by the Vedas so that you have progeny, you have children, which is the right thing in life. Now, if one tends to misuse this, then that is incorrect. So that's why here in the purport it also says that Vedic culture cannot recommend something which disturbs human life. Now a lot of today's Kali Yuga, many people invent different religions and they kind of try to concoct saying, you know, we'll give you peace and everything. But the problem is if one doesn't realize that everything is owned by God and it is to be utilized for His service and pleasure, the kama and krodha will still come, no matter what we do. So, the only way to achieve this is actually to chant the Lord's name and to approach a spiritual master. Because without that submission, as it is also said in this purport very clearly, that a person who is having this kind of desires cannot submit humbly to someone. And the reason for that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Tranadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishnuna, Amanina Madhena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Because when one wants to achieve something from someone or take something from someone, how will you show humility? If we take the example of Bali Maharaj, and when Vamanadev actually came to him, asking him the three pieces of land, Bali Maharaj was humble enough to accept subservience to the gift. It is said actually in a context of that, many times we read the saying Atithi Devo Bhava. Actually, the meaning of this is, it is not an invited guest. In Sanskritam, Atithi means, Tithi means a known time, a known place, a known, a known occurrence, which is some, let's say you have given an invitation to someone. The best example I can give is, you have a marriage or you have a function and you have invited someone. So the person already knows, intimated of the time and place of the event. Atithi means someone who is uninvited. So the answer people think that Atithi Devo Bhava means every guest is Devo Bhava means is like God, or you have to treat him like that. No, it's actually the uninvited guest is what you should treat him and give him that respect. So Bali Maharaj had the humility to actually give that respect to Vamanadev, who himself was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who took incarnation. And Bali Maharaj was humble enough to give up that position of his worldly kingdom and give that seat to Bali Maharaj, to Vamanadev, wash his feet and accept his desire. So the same applies to all of us in life, that if one wants to learn something higher from someone, one has to go down. One has to be humble enough, like we go to a spiritual master. People go to teachers. People go to professors in college. You have to be humble enough to learn. And that humility should stay, actually. A student should not think that once he has learned, after all knowledge is free, we can say. It is for learning everything. But once the student becomes learned enough, he should never think that he has become greater than the teacher. That is not humility. That is false perception. That is material sense of attachment. Especially in spiritual life, when we want to progress, that is a very, very important aspect. Whether it be our Siksha Guru or Diksha Gurus or other devotees we engage, we learn from them. We should be grateful in this lifetime for what we have learned from them. Because as Jivatma, we may know everything. As a spirit soul knows everything. But when we have taken our karma and this body, we have to rely on other people. And so that is very important, to show that gratitude to other people who whatever we have learned. Now, the same context here, as it is said that in this case, that the person will not submit to a bona fide spiritual master and accept, and one should approach with humility. The same context actually can be given in the pastime of Varahadev, where Hiranyaksha. So we know that tomorrow is Varahadev's appearance day. And in that context, actually, Hiranyaksha goes, it so happens, and maybe for the gist of people, why even Varahadev came? Why incarnated? So obviously at the end of Pralayam, the earth, as we call Bhudevi, Bhuloka, and she is actually Bhudevi. She is one of the consorts of Lord. We must understand that earth itself, we say Mother Earth. But who is that mother? Is actually Bhudevi. She is an incarnation of the consort of the Lord. And that's why in many places we say Mother Earth. But people don't understand who that mother is. She is actually the consort of the Lord. And it so happens that at the end of one pralayam, that the Bhulokam lies at the bottom of the Garbhodaka ocean. And we know the pastime where when the Sanat Kumaras went to visit Lord in Vaikuntha Loka, how they got cursed because of the fact that Jaya and Vijaya stopped them from entering and getting the darshan of the Lord. And so they were cursed that they had the choice to be born as 3 lifetimes as demons or 100 births as the devotees of the Lord. And they pleaded, living 3 births itself is, one moment itself is so difficult. How can we bear 100? So we rather take 3. And that is why the first time they come as the sons of Diti, Aditi as Aditi, as Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyaksha is the younger brother of Hiranyakashipu. And as we know that Hiranyakashipu performed all the penances to become, he wanted to become immortal, but he cannot. Because even Brahma said, I am not immortal, what can I grant you the boon? So it so happened that because of this prowess, Hiranyaksha, his younger brother, went around taking his club, his instruments, you know, conquering all the devas, all the 3 worlds. And it so happened, he went to Varuna because he was searching for a worthy opponent to fight. And when he went to Varuna, it so happened Varuna's place of residence is called Vibhavari. And he went there. Varuna is seated on the throne. And Hiranyaksha, in spite of being so materially puffed and strong, he goes down and bows to Varuna, saying, I am so meek and humble, I want to know who is the strongest person I can fight. So this is kind of, he's showing his ego and not humility by bowing down. So we can see the contrast of 2 places where Bali Maharaj gives that respect to Vamana Dev and offers him the seat, whereas Hiranyaksha comes and shows ego and pride in bowing down as a sarcasm to show, can you tell me? And when Varuna sees this, he actually, he also gets emboldened by anger, but he says, you know what, there is a person, you can go and fight the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the worthy opponent for you, and he is there to take care of all people like you. So it so happens that as this is happening, Lord Brahma has, you know, he is in charge of the creation, and he creates the 4 Sanat Kumaras. And of course, it so happens that when he talks to Manu and his wife that you all should go and procreate the world and, spread this Sanatana Dharma, at that point, Manu asks the question to his father, Brahma, is that, my lord, what is the residence place I should? So at that point, he sees, because it is the start of the Pralayam itself has happened, the Bhulokam or earth is lying in Garbhodaka ocean at the bottom. And Brahma for a moment meditates. Just like in order to do creation, Lord Brahma had to meditate. He had to do penance. And that's how we say, Ishvara Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govindam Sarvakarana Karanam. You know, Lord Brahma has been born from the navel of the Lord. And so when Brahma meditated again, what should happen? A small creature exited out of his nostril. And this nostril turned out to be the boar, small boar. The moment Narada and other people saw this, they couldn't figure what is this exactly happening. What is this creature all of a sudden which came out of my Lord Brahma's nostril? And every moment they started thinking, this boar started growing in size. It first became, the moment the first thought came, it became the size of a stone. And then it became even the size of a rock. And then a mountain. And it became so huge. And finally at that point, Brahma realized that this is none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has incarnated. And we know why in Bhagavad Gita it is said that paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha drushtutam. He doesn't come first to vanquish the demons or the evil people. He first comes to protect his devotees, his bhaktas, for those who he cares about. That is the purpose. And whom did he care about here actually? It was Bhudevi. He incarnated directly to protect her actually, to save her. And then take care of Hiranyaksha. And it will be funny to see that how when it is said that by in the sixth canto, it is said, the third canto, that you know before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Varahadev flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his heart quivers, his very glands, and with his glittering white tusks. And here it is described that he was like either a big mountain or sustainer of earth. You know? So, in this whole pastime, what happens is, finally, Hiranyaksha comes to know that Vishnu is incarnated as this boar. And it so happened that he began fighting with the Lord. Of course, before fighting, Varadev first went and lifted earth. And he put her on his tusk, actually. He didn't go to fight first. It is again here saying, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushyantam. First to protect his devotee. First to take care of them. And then, so he goes and lifts Bhumi Devi. And after he lifts her, then he starts fighting. Now, Hiranyaksha was very puffed up because of his ego and also the fact that he had the support of his brother. But he thought, what this boar could fight with me? And it so happened that the Hiranyaksha started to embrace the Lord, thinking he could wrap this boar and crush him. But it was of no avail, because the reason is, he thought by his own material way, he can measure the breadth and the length of the Lord. And this is the same problem we see in today's material universe too. Science, of course, is part of Vedic literature. But one cannot comprehend the Supreme Lord's glories just by mental speculation. This is called demoniac mentality or pure material understanding. One needs to surrender to Lord or to spiritual master to understand the Supreme Lord, to understand God, His qualities and pastimes. Because without surrendering to Him, one cannot understand even a single aspect of Him. So, it so happened, as is said in the Bhagavatam, that Tam Mushtibhir Vinighantam Vajrasharira Dokshaja Karena Karna Mulehan Yathat Vastram Marutpathihi. The demon Hiranyaksha now began to strike the Lord with its hard fists. But Lord Adokshaja slapped him, you know, with this right hoof. He just slapped him with the root of, to the root of his ear. And he hit the demon. Just one slap he gave. And though struck indifferently by the Lord, it is said, Sa ahato vishvajita hi avagnaya paribrahmat gatra udasta lochana vishirna bhava anghira shiroru patat yatha nagendro lulito nabhastasvata. Though struck indifferently by the Lord, the conqueror fall, the demon's body began to wheel. His eyes bulged out of his sockets, his arms and legs broken, his hair on his head scattered, and he fell down dead like a gigantic uprooted tree. This is the strength of the Lord. All he did was one slap and he fell down. So this shows how powerful the Lord is. Actually, the Lord doesn't even need to come. As I said, the Lord always says, I can take care of all of this even without me coming personally. But yes, he wants to protect his devotee. And it so says that in the purport, it didn't take a single moment. Of all the inconceivable power Hiranyaksha was trying to show, it did not. Of course, as soon as this happened, Brahma and all the other demigods actually came and they praised Lord Varaha. Now, It is said that Lord Varaha took care of Hiranyaksha, but he lifted Bhumi Devi. And Bhumi Devi had a question. You see, we all live on this planet. And the mother, as we know, always cares for her children. It is a natural embodiment, a maternal affection. So Bhumi Devi asked, "You have protected me. What about my children? What will be their fate?" And as we said in this purport, it is not about Bhumi Devi is asking part of what is a material way of life. She wants to know what after human life, how will those jivatmas be benefited? So in Bhagavad Gita, as we know, Lord Krishna says, Sarvadharma parityagya mam ekam sharanam vrajaha. So Lord Varaha answers to Bhumi Devi, and he tells him that Shushvate sharire stite satiyo nara dhatu stite kashtarupam samamajam tathastu kriyamanam pashtakashana sannibham aham smarami bad bhaktam nayami paramam gatim. What he says is, if one remembers God or me, the Supreme Lord, me, when they are hearty and healthy, when the good state of mind, when they remember me in that mode and surrender to me, and that word surrender is important, when they think of me and surrender to me, I will make sure that even at the last moment of their life, when they are lying as a log of wood, I will make sure I will come into their remembrance. This is called Varaha Charma Shlokam. This is what Lord Varaha tells Bhumi Devi. And it is important because, as we say, Antakale Smitaryarthi, what we remember at the time of passing or death is important. Because what we do at that time is what the form or nature of our next birth or body attains. So Lord Varaha is assuring each and every one of us that if in the normal state, when we are healthy and hearty, we can remember him and surrender to him, he will make sure that one is lying like a log of wood. Because as we know, when one is in his last stage of life, it's very difficult. We don't know what stage we may be. Our consciousness may not be there. Our throat may be choked. We may not be able to see properly. We could not hear properly. Lord says, Aham smarami mad bhaktam nayami paramam gatim. I make sure. That is the assurance Lord gives to his devotees. But in order for this, as we said in surrender, or the word is called saranagati, one should have faith in the Lord that he will come. Utmost faith should be there in God. Unflinching faith. And this faith can only come, of course, through surrendering to a bona fide spiritual master and following the process, which means chanting the Lord's name, engaging in sattvic guna activities, associating with people which are in the mode of goodness. And that way we can help ourselves, you know, to improve our consciousness. And that's why here it is said that one can accept material, you know, one who accepts material sense objects of gratification. Yes, they are required in life, but they should not be the prime goal of life. They may be instruments required. For example, we may need electricity, we need a job. All of these are required, but they should not be the end goal of life. The end goal of life should be to surrender to God and serve him. That is the most important thing. And serve with love. Actually, when Varaha actually appears, all the different residents of the different lokas, like Janaloka, Maharloka, Tapaloka, they sing Vedic hymns. They chant the Vedic mantras. And When they chant, the Lord hears them and he understands it's they are chanting for him, for his pleasure. That is the consciousness we should also have when we chant the holy name. We should chant for his pleasure. We should think about him. We should only remember about him. And that love will come automatically. It will purify. But that is the real purpose of chanting the holy names of the Lord, remembering him, is to develop that love for him, an attachment for him, not attachment for dead material objects. Yes, because of our karma, covering of karma, it is what it is. So one should get up to that stage. Also here, as I read earlier, you know, sometimes the symptom of ignorant society, falsely accepting material body is the highest good. And this is the problem, because people only think that science and material life has advanced so much, but science cannot stop death. That's why one has to go to the Vedas. The answer to this is to go back to Godhead, is to surrender to him, and to do loving devotional service to Lord. That is the ultimate goal. In fact, that is all what the residents of Vaikuntha Loka do, or in Goloka Vrindavana do, is only loving devotional service to Lord. Everything else is secondary. How am I able to serve God with love? What do I need? What do you need from me? That is humility. In material universe, we say, I want something. Our attitude should be is, Lord, what do you need? In what way I can serve you? What would please you? That is called anukulasya sankalpaha. That is called one of the angams of surrender or saranagati. We also see that this is a very important aspect. Nityananda Prabhu, as we know, whose appearance day is coming in 2 days, also was one of the closest associates of Lord Chaitanya. And what he would be doing is only to serve the Lord in every way possible. For example, one day it so happened, right? We know the pastime of Jagai and Madai, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Haridas Thakur and Nityananda Prabhu, please go out and preach the holy name of the Lord. Preach his glories. And that is what Nityananda Prabhu did. His goal was to please the Lord. We know Adi Sesha is actually Nityananda Prabhu, Balarama as we say, and he serves him constantly as paraphernalia of the Lord, as slippers, as flute, everything, all the paraphernalia he's required is what he is doing. He's in constant service of the Lord. And just like Nityananda Prabhu gives us a example of how we should be. And it is said that without mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, it is very difficult to attain Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And as we know, there is a very nice poem written by Narottama Das Thakur, like Nitai Pada Kamala Koti Chandra Susitala. Like millions of moons, his feet are so soothing. Millions. One moon is enough. We see one moon. How about millions of moons? How soothing it would be. Not for light. The moon light is, that's a different aspect. The real aspect is the calmness it gives, the pleasure it gives in seeing his feet and being subservient to that feet. Is that meaning of Koti Chandra Susitala? Nityananda Prabhu, of course, we know has, I know many people may talk in the next 2 days about Nityananda Prabhu, and I wanted to touch a few points here that his goal was to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we know there is a very nice pastime of this Danda Bhanga, where he breaks the staff, the sannyasa staff of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when they are going from Bhuvaneshwar, and you know, when they are traveling with the Lord. And it so happened that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the staff, his danda staff, to Nityananda Prabhu. And it so happens that he breaks it into three pieces and throws it away in the river. And then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asks him back, he says that, you gave it to me, and because of the, when you were bowing down and weight of your feet, my body, it all broke together. But actually, that's not the case. The real aspect of the three things, why he broke the staff, is to make sure that is I, oneness, and mine. These three things are impediments to one's advancement in spiritual life. The I, ownership, oneness, which means Advaitam, and mine, possessiveness or attachment. These are the three things which actually are impediments to advancing in spiritual life, which is contrary to exactly what this verse says, is one who accepts material sense objects as certainly desirable and attached to them. And that is the reason. We also know that Balaram or Nityananda Prabhu, as he has incarnated, even came as Ramanuja. And one of the proponents of Vishishtadvaitam philosophy itself, which is qualified dualism. And even Ramanuja was a great preceptor. He lived for 100 years. He is the founder Acharya of the Sri Sampradayam. And when his guru gave him the mantra to chant, to get to go back to the Lord's abode, we call Moksham, he said to him, this is a secret, don't distribute to everyone. But Ramanuja was not, he wanted to make sure that everyone gets the benefit, irrespective of caste, creed, anything. He went on the top of the mountain and he chanted, he said, if by the effect of me, his guru, when his guru is in, it's not his true guru actually, he goes to initially a school of Yadava Prakash, which is a Advaita school. And there itself, basically there is a lot of discontent, because at that time, Advaita philosophers only accepted part of the Vedas, which only interpreted in one area, which is called Advaitam. But Ramanuja said, the Vedas are whole. You cannot reject everything. You cannot reject some and keep other. You need to keep everything together. And that is the key. So it so happened that Ramanuja said, if for the sake of me going to hell, 100 people can get go back to the Lord's abode, I will surely take that punishment. So he went on top of the hill and he chanted the mantra for everyone to get. Just so this is the magnanimity of Balaram or Nityananda Mahaprabhu or Ramanuja, who are all one and the same. That their purpose is to serve the Lord and give this knowledge to other people. So this is really the essence of Vedic knowledge and literature. That Vedic culture or knowledge never goes against or disturbs human life. It is actually we, unfortunately, due to our desires, we create the disturbance. Animals, unfortunately, if you see, don't create disturbance amongst each other in a forest. The lion may eat whatever it has to eat. The giraffe may eat what it's supposed to eat. If you see ever a documentary in a forest, it lives its life according to karma. It doesn't go out of its way. It is we humans, we create all this problem in the world. And that is the difference, that is the aspect of this Vedic culture. So, I would just like to end today's class. This is a gist of today's verse of where we are and how it relates to the appearance day of Varadev, and also Nityananda Prabhu's appearance day coming Monday.
Hari Bol Prabhu, I was wondering, what is the cause of someone giving up their material attachments and performing devotional service?
Actually, the real reason why one will ever give up material attachment is because there are... So, according to Shastra, a Jivatma, when he comes to human form of life, you see, as we say that in this material universe, No matter how much happiness one gets, the richest man, you can say, how much money he has problems. At some point, due to karma, going through this cycle of birth and death, a point will come that they will realize that no matter how much happiness they try, it will not solve all their problems. And at that point, some has to surrender. So for example, when someone has an ailment today, he goes to a doctor, right? And he may go to a doctor, it may solve his health problem. But the problem is, that's just one example. There may be other difficulties in life. As we know, there are three types of klesha. Adhyatmika klesha, adi bhautika klesha, adi devika klesha. All the combination of three is happening in all of our lives according to our karma and other people around us. So a point will come that the person will have to say that, you know, I don't have answers to all these problems. Now, the intelligent man, according to Veda, says he looks to Shastra to come to the solution. Sarva karana, sarva Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigra Anadiradir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. But in order to do that, a Vaishnava is required. And only because of a Vaishnava, in that contact of Vaishnava, for example, in today's world, we have media, or we have Srila Prabhupada's books, or we have people who go to preach, you know, in books, or people do preaching programs, or the people spread the name of the God, of the Lord. So only because ultimately a Vaishnava, that one realizes that this is not the ultimate goal of life. So there is no set answer, Prabhuji, in terms of why one may leave, but the cause of it is material suffering, and how much we want cannot be sought. Even if a person has a $500 million lottery, he may be happy, but he will not be able to solve all his problems. And for that, one has to go to the Vedas. So a person, generally speaking, as Kunti says, that one really only comes, if you think about it today also, do we see, not from a discouraging aspect, but a practical aspect, do we see people who are extremely wealthy and opulent and rich take to devotional service? Probably not. Right? Now, it doesn't mean that they may be very good by heart. They may be doing a lot of charity. They may be very good in nature. But the problem is, when only, Kunti Devi says, when they feel either of these three, adhyatmika, adi bhautika, adi devika, whatever the combination may come in, then they realize, I need answers to this. So then people go to a church, people go to a temple, right? Then they slowly come to the stage that, okay, this is not going to help me solve my life's problems or my family members' problems. The only way to do this, that's why we say, right, that you can keep on solving the problem, but the main question is, how do you get out of cycle of birth and death? One can solve, for example, we can say, yes, you take to devotional service of Lord, you surrender, some things may improve in life, and some prarabdha karma may go away, some may still impact. But that is not just the goal of life. That's why Vedas keep on telling that human life is to be used for going back to Lord's abode. Now, but the Vedas are also very kind, because Lord knows that not every jivatma can take this process in one step. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Lord says, Bhavunam janmanam ante jnanamam yam prapadyate. Many, many human births. Vasudeva sarvam iti samatmasu durlabaha. Not one human birth. If I were to say that this is my first lifetime as human birth, I think I am mistaken. I may have taken millions of human births before and gone through enough karma, and maybe in this lifetime, due to the mercy of my and bring of my parents and my spiritual master, that I have come to realize at least this. But if we were to think that this is the first lifetime we realize Vasudeva Saromiti, that is incorrect. So it is a gradual process. There is no set answer. It depends on the way, and that is why we say that Vaishnavas are so important, because Vaishnavas give that mercy to the Jivatma, like Prabhupada did. As I quoted the example of Ramanujacharya. He went on top of the hill to give the Ashtakram Mantram to everyone. Prabhupada preached the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu everywhere in this world. He wanted to distribute books because he wanted everyone to get that benefit. And that is why we hold Vaishnavas in so high regard. As I said earlier in the class, that whatever we may have learned from other Vaishnavas, we should be grateful to them. And that's why Prabhuji, as he said, yes, only when one goes through suffering and one realizes it doesn't solve life's problems, one will take to devotional service of Lord. But it is a slow and gradual process. Based on one's karma, based on the association one gets of a Vaishnava, one could immediately advance in one lifetime. Some people may not advance. So for example, we know that many bhaktas have taken to devotional service. You know, not saying just in ISKCON, right? There are people of other Vaishnava sampradayas, right? We know Prabhupada initiated 10,000 plus disciples, right? A lot of disciples. Now, some are still here, some still follow, some may not follow. But that's okay. You know, they have started the process. And the eventual end goal is to go back to Godhead. They have realized it. They know it and the Jivatma registers it, right? We think about body. The Jivatma has registered after hearing or reading Prabhupada's books or Vaishnava philosophy that going back to Lord's abode is the ultimate goal. Now, how one takes to it is also free will. As Lord says that, I cannot make you love me. I can show you the path to love me and serve me. But yes, Prabhuji, so to give up one's material life, when I say, we don't say renunciation, false renunciation, but I just to clarify to people that it means using the material objects to serve the Lord slowly and gradually, and that realization takes time.
Hare Krishna. So my question is, you were talking about the animals that don't like step over the boundary of their karma and they only live within their karma. And so I was curious, what is the indication or what is the parameters to know that we're living inside of our karma and then we don't cross that line?
So in order to understand that boundary, one actually has to look to Shastra and Vedas. And which means, in today's world, we have to know from a spiritual master. I mean, on a very low level basis, you should say simple aspects of life like honesty, integrity, ethics. I mean, I'm just using some basic words, right? Cleanliness, saucham. These are very important things, right? Like our Vedas recommend getting up in the morning, taking a bath early, going to a temple or in your home, whatever we do. These are basic things. Right? Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, in short, Prabhuji, I will answer that. Of course, as you know, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord has listed in the chapter that what are the qualities which are in Sattva Gunam. Right? What are the qualities in Rajo Gunam and Tamo Gunam. Right? So, one should try to aspire and try to be in those qualities which are there in Sattva Gunam. Yes, we cannot be 100%. But we should try to make sure. For example, when we follow four regulative principles, right? They are actually, the reason we call four regulative principles, actually according to Vaishnava philosophy or anyone in Sattvic Dharma, they are minimum requirement, right? I mean, being non-violent, being a vegetarian, right? Not taking intoxication. These are all in modes of goodness itself. So that is at least minimal. So, that itself will give us an idea of, are we in the right state of mind to be or not crossing over the boundary. So, for those people who may say, we may go and, indulge in intoxication and everything, that is not in mode of goodness, right? We know that from Shastra itself. We know from Bhagavad Gita. We know what intoxication leads to, the problems in today's life. Just a material example, across most countries in the world, you cannot drive while intoxicated. DUI is a crime. I'm just using that as an example, right? At least from a society standpoint, people understand that. But what Shastra is telling is, One should be saucham, cleanliness, speak the truth, honesty, integrity, chant the Lord's name, do devotional service, serve unto other people. These are at least minimal things. Give charity. Right? Now, as further and further we go, that people who are violent, who are not being vegetarian, this is going towards that boundary, right? That's what we are doing. So, if we read Bhagavad Gita and we understand what our Guru and Shastra are saying, we will surely know to stay in that bounds and we're not crossing. What is important is, people may know the boundary, but how do you make sure you stop it from happening? That is important. Because mind is sometimes very fickle for people. It is natural for all of us. Right? So at that time, one should remember the Lord. One should chant His name. One should focus on His feet. One should think about one's spiritual master. Because that will give the... So, if most people are grateful, say, you know, we are grateful to our parents or our spiritual master who have given us this knowledge, I should make sure I don't cross that boundary at least. At least make an attempt. I'm not saying we are perfect. Lord understands forgiveness, right? But at least once we know that boundary, we should say, let me try to be the best thing. For example, if we know the situation somewhere is not good, then don't go there. I'm just using an example, right? If you know a place is supposed to be very corrupted, is not good, try to make a conscious sense not to go there. Now, sometimes it may be unavoidable, but try to do your best to keep yourself, right? Just like many examples use, the lotus stays in the water but doesn't get touching the water below. Something like that. Will that answer your question, Prabhuji, at least?
Can you tell me what's the difference between melody and flow of thought?
So, Prabhuji, from humility. So, Prabhuji, humility is an aspect where the inner realization itself comes. Low self-esteem may be, you can correct me on the English definition. You know, people may have low self-esteem of saying, I'm not qualified to do this, I'm not doing that. You know, people look down upon me. That may be inside, inner self. But humility is something which comes from within. Right? Low self-esteem is attributed to one's bodily aspect. Now, it doesn't mean there may be a little bit of linkage, but real humility actually means it's not because of my body. It should be basically from inner self, that realization. Right? Today I have low self-esteem because someone told me that I'm not fit to do this. I feel bad. I can't do this. Okay. But the other way you said is, if your spiritual master says, you're not fit to do this, you know, that, of course, a bona fide spiritual master, I would like to say that. You know, when you get instruction from a worthy bona fide spiritual master who says, the guru says, you don't have the qualification. And one should take it as an inner humility saying, I accept my fault and I'm ready to learn and become better. Right? Once, humility means placing other people above yourself and serving them. But not just, yes, we live in a material universe, but it's more about from inner self knowing that I am subservient to them. Self-esteem is kind of more related, you could say, to one's attributes in life or something, right? Yes, there may be a little bit of interlinkage in terms of what we call of one's own self-esteem of what, you know, I feel inside. But you could say that one when has self-humility, one say, we, a lot of people say, oh, Prabhu, I'm very, you know, I'm not fit, I'm not to do this. That's okay, but really speaking, it should be, I think I have a lot more to go, you know, I have a lot more to learn and be humble enough to surrender. Because humility really means to surrender someone. Low self-esteem doesn't cause one to surrender sometimes. If you think in the material universe, right? Low esteem may cause someone to say, okay, I don't have this, okay, I need to get myself up, I can increase my skill and, you know, feel better. But this is a different, it's a, there's a difference of the application of humility and self-esteem. Does that make, Prabhuji, does it give you, because this is a very, a little bit of, or maybe it's a little more specific thing you're asking about self-esteem or humility. Could you clarify if that is what you're looking for? No, actually, they are, as I said, they are interlinked that, but Prabhuji, it's not a question of having low self-esteem may happen, but what is more important is when one comes out of a low self-esteem, at least in our spiritual life, one should learn to be humble enough. So for example, I may have low self-esteem. I can't do this. I can't go outside. I don't feel it this way. But once you get up to that, one should be, thank you, my Lord. Thank you for our other people around me because of which I'm able to overcome this or I feel better now. But I always want to be servant of your feet. If we think that way, then this, it may happen to be low self-esteem, but it may improve ourselves to be a better person, right? And help us advance spiritually. That's more important because ultimately humility is more about spiritual advancement. Yes, sometimes you have to be humble in material universe too. There's nothing wrong about it. But that is part and parcel. Okay, anything else or... Okay, Randaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Also, today's Ekadashi, as most people must have seen, also those people are not hearing, please try to avoid eating rice or grains. It is beneficial. If you can avoid rice or grains today, whoever can possible, at least as much as possible, avoid rice and grains. And tomorrow is Dwadashi, so you can break the fast tomorrow morning. As Vaishnavas, we practice Ekadashi because it helps advance spiritually. As we know, eating rice on Ekadashi accounts for more sins. So please avoid doing that. Hare Krishna.